When it comes to your finances, go for the credit card that's always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. Real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So why do you want to learn a new language?
I'll tell you why. Because ¿dónde está el baño? Can be a very important question at times. You know, Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. Fast track your language acquisition with immersive lessons designed to teach you to pick up languages in a natural way. I love the fact that I can go from my laptop to my phone to pretty much anywhere and learn the language of my choice. Not to mention, I'm bringing my communication skills to new heights. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a limited time, StarTalk Radio listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/StarTalk. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/StarTalk today.
Welcome to Star Talk, your place in the universe where science and pop culture collide. Star Talk begins right now.
Welcome to the Hall of the Universe. I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson, your personal astrophysicist, and this is Star Talk. Tonight, we're going to explore the science behind the hit TV series Game of Thrones. Oh my God! From flying, fire-breathing dragons to magic to what it takes to survive in the Middle Ages. So let's do this. I never tackle these subjects alone. First, my co-host, Michael Ian Black.
Hello.
Michael. A professional comedian, and you are not a stranger to Star Talk.
No, I have the Star Talk jigsaw puzzle. I have the Star Talk stuffed animals. I'm a fan.
So tonight our topic is, of course, Game of Thrones, and I don't claim particular expertise in that, but other people do, especially this woman here, Helen Keane. Helen, welcome to Star Talk. We're going to draw heavily on your expertise in this regard because we couldn't believe this. You wrote a book called The Science of Game of Thrones.
Destiny. It's destiny.
And I'm surprised it's even this thick.
Lots of pictures.
Lots of pictures. So let's get a taste of why Game of Thrones is such a pop culture phenom. Let's check out this clip.
Whoever you are, wherever you go, someone wants to murder you. Are you afraid?
Love me some fire-breathing dragons. So this is based on a series, a fantasy series by George R.R. Martin of the same title. And that program averages 23 million views per episode. So, Helen, this is set in a medieval age.
Mm.
And so, to put us on record, what defines the medieval age? Is that even the right thing? Or is it the Dark Ages? What is it?
Well, I think it's kind of a term, it's always controversy around these things. It's sort of a term for the period in European history from the end of the Roman Empire, so about sort of 400, 500 AD until
that early,
15th century. Yeah.
Wow, so this is 1,000 years.
Yeah.
But there are some things that are clearly, it seems to me, post-Dark Ages or very late Middle Ages. So it's clearly a mixture of times to enable him to tell whatever story he wants.
Yeah.
And that doesn't bother people because it's fantasy, I guess. Mm. Is that right?
And I think as well, any fantasy or science fiction always to a certain degree reflects the world that it's made in as well.
Okay, so I was out at Comic-Con and we stumbled on one of the actors, Isaac Wright. Isaac Wright, who plays the character Bran Stark in the series on HBO. Let's check it out. So how old are you?
17.
17. And the show's been on for 6 years.
Yeah.
And you've been in there from the beginning.
Yeah.
So carry the two, divide by the, you would have been 11.
I think I was actually 10 because we did a pilot as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you're a career Game of Thrones guy.
Yeah, that's me. Game of Thrones for life.
So they've got to write your character to age with you.
Yeah, luckily for me.
Because when you're grown up, you kind of stay the same the whole time.
No, yeah, right. Exactly. It doesn't happen when you're at this age.
Did you, as a kid, you wanted to be an actor?
Not especially. No, I kind of fell into that.
Don't tell.
Yeah, sorry, yeah, it was my dream.
Were you a geeky kid, or you're still geeky?
Definitely geeky.
Yeah?
Definitely.
Oh, yeah. Card carrying.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. And what's your best measure of your geekitude?
Well, I'm big into physics.
Physics?
Yeah, I like it.
Physics. If you're into physics, that's good. We're done here.
Yeah.
Physics. So in the UK, do you have tutors, or do you actually go to school?
No, I go to school.
You go to school. Yeah. Okay. So so that just means that the show is not taking you away all the time.
Well, it means day. That when I film the show, I just have to kind of take any work that I know I'm going to miss and try and get it done at the weekends or whenever I've got some days off.
Okay, so where are you this year in your educational trajectory?
So I'm year 12, which is...
So there'd be a senior in high school for us.
I think so. So I have one more year before college.
Before college. So what do you want to major in?
I'm thinking I'd quite like to do a joint honors in music and maths.
Music and maths.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Do you do music now?
Yeah.
What do you do?
I play piano mainly, but I'm playing a bit of guitar at the moment.
Okay, this is great. I just met, like, recently, Brian May.
Oh, cool. Oh, right. He's the king of physics.
Yeah, there he is. It's like, I really want a PhD in astrophysics, but
yeah, I
will...
be a rock star.
Yeah, let me be a rock star first. Let me delay that. So Brian May, like lead guitarist of Queen, has a PhD in astrophysics.
I know. It's so cool.
Can't get cooler than that.
And so, Brian Cox as well.
Brian Cox.
Keyboards.
Yeah, Brian Cox, one of the best known scientists in the UK.
Yeah.
And he, many of us know him here as well.
Yeah,
but his it's not as big as he is in the UK, but he was also a rock star in the UK,
right? Yeah, he was.
Had a number, a top...
I think he did. I
top
think he could.
10 song 1 year.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this may be the trend line.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, you'll be a famous actor, then a musician, then you get your PhD.
Yeah. Yeah, sounds like a plan.
That's a plan. We got this. Tell your parents you got this going, right? So, what's the geekiest thing you ever did?
Ooh, well...
So it's got to be so geeky that you are simultaneously embarrassed and proud of it.
Oh. Okay. I can recite pi to quite a few decimal places.
Oh, ooh. How many decimal places?
It used to be 60, but I think it's down to about 40 now.
Ooh.
I know, I'm sorry.
Ooh, okay. Well, why don't we get you on record for that?
All right.
And now, just so you know, 40, 50, 60... among pi people, that's entry level.
Yeah,
that's they won't even let you in the bar, okay?
Some guy can do it to 67,000.
Yeah, I know, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. But, among actors, okay, maybe you win, okay? So let's go, let's get the camera on him, okay? Come on, I'll rub your shoulders here. Okay, okay, ready? Good. Okay,
go.
Get ready, okay. I'll start you off. Ready?
3.1415965358979323846264338327950.
Okay, how many did we get there? You know who did really well?
Who?
Chris Hardwick.
Oh.
Because he majored in math and philosophy.
Oh.
So we had him on. He went on. It was like, can we stop? Can we stop him now, please? No, but that's good. That is plenty of precision to make any calculation you need to find where the universe. So that's good. We'll take that as card-carrying geek.
Thank you.
So the geeks are taking over.
Yeah, we're coming out.
Yeah, so I'm convinced that they mistranslated that line in the Bible.
Go on.
It's, and the geek shall inherit the earth. So had you imagined that this was something that would go this long?
No. I mean, these kind of, you, there are every
You're supposed to say at this point, I'd really rather direct. That's what you're...
Yeah. I think every now and then you come across these shows that click and work and then kind of snowball into these huge phenomenons. But
why do you think it clicked and worked?
I think what's cool about Game of Thrones is it is medieval history, but without kind of the historical aspect, if you get what I mean, because it has that sort of basis in reality, but there's still room to explore all these fantastical elements.
So the room to explore on top, layered on top of enough that is medievally real,
exactly.
I guess that anchors it. And is there anything that surprised you the most about it? Because when I think about the medieval times, I'm just thinking, I am so glad science got invented. That's all I'm thinking.
I completely concur.
They did what? They believed what?
I think that's very evident in Game of Thrones. You've got all these weird kind of religious sects and strange things going on.
And magic is real.
Yeah.
And gods are real. And
well, what's interesting is the way Game of Thrones presents it is it's everyone in the world is skeptical about it. They don't really believe that there are the dragons there and that all these White Walkers died thousands of years ago.
Yeah. But then there are the believers there where stuff actually happens.
Yeah.
Now you got to deal with that.
Absolutely. And there were obviously so many things that back in those days you wouldn't have been able to explain or anticipate. And so naturally you assume it's magic.
So Helen, tell me about what role magic played in the Middle Ages.
Well, I think in the Middle Ages, magic and religion weren't really particularly separated. I mean, I think there was an element in religion that was magic and an element in magic that was religion.
Mysterious.
Yeah. I mean, and I think if we go back even further...
So you don't think there was even a distinction? There was just all mystery that you don't understand, and there's somebody who's telling you about it.
Yeah, and it's either coming from God, it's either coming from a good source, or it's coming from demons and Satan. So, yeah.
Right, because you can't have a good source unless there's an evil source.
No, of course, yes.
The yin and the yang.
Yeah.
The up and the down.
The up and
the backwards
down.
And the forwards. I get it, man.
Okay. Just try to stay with the
I'm hep. I get it.
But there are other things. So, for example, we remember Merlin from Arthurian legend. There, in almost all of these stories, there's somebody who knows some chemistry or alchemy, and they've got power. This would be medieval magic. Mm. It's something that you don't expect. It's something mysterious happening. And in any pre-scientific era, if you do something that's scientific and don't explain it, it's magic. One of the things that fascinates me most, of course, or I think anyone, is dragons. They're just the coolest. We all want a dragon.
What is the history of dragons? Where do they originate? Do you know?
Well, that's one of the interesting things. They seem to originate all over the world. There are lots and lots of different countries and cultures that all have a dragon myth.
All fire-breathing?
Not always fire-breathing, no.
Then it's not a dragon.
I think often fire-breathing.
Are the Asian dragons fire-breathing? Are they?
I don't know.
I know they don't have wings.
So there are different number of limbs as well. Yeah, and there are different number of limbs. Some dragons have four legs and two wings, and some dragons have two legs and two wings, which would be more evolutionarily plausible.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, did you get what she said there? It's important.
Let me explain it for the audience at home. Two legs and two wings is more evolutionarily plausible.
Correct.
Because animals have four, and it would evolve into two in horns and fangs.
Basically correct. Yeah, you have four limbs to work with.
Why?
It just is. It's the...
Lame answer, Dr.
The branch of the evolutionary tree that led to mammals and other vertebrates, there are four limbs. Right. And so that's what you're stuck with. Now, if you want to fly, you got to give up two of those limbs for wings. The bats did it. The birds did it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The bats, their four limbs are wings. And birds, they don't have front arms, right? Those are, their front arms are their wings. And so, yeah, that'd be evolutionary sound. So I asked one of the actors, Isaac Wright, I asked him about dragons, because it's a major part, a major force in the storytelling. So let's check out. How good could a fantasy possibly be unless it's got dragons?
Exactly. It's not fantasy unless you have
you need the dragon.
Yeah.
You need the dragons. And in my home institution, the American Museum of Natural History, we had an exhibit a few years ago that was all about mythical monsters and whether they were the imaginations of people who discovered fossils of extinct dinosaurs.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah. So imagine, you know, Triceratops. Imagine that emerging from the eroding side of a cliff.
That would be pretty.
Right? Pretty and clearly freaky. No other animal you've seen. It's extinct.
Yeah.
But the concept of extinction is a modern idea.
Yeah.
A few hundred years ago. So here's this thing. It can't be. It must be.
Yeah.
A monster.
Yeah.
That we fear in the night. Huh. And so. So, yeah, so you didn't know about that?
No, I haven't really thought about that.
Yeah. I think you love dragons because they're great if they're your friend, but if they're not, they're a super predator.
And that's another theory, actually, about where we have this idea of dragons from that's even more ancient than the idea of people discovering fossils, this idea that it might date back to when we were very frightened of apex predators. An anthropologist called David E. Jones, who puts forward this theory, he studied vervet monkeys in Africa, and he noticed that they are particularly anxious about three predators, lions, eagles, and snakes. And so they have a particular cry that they make when they see any of these three creatures.
Really?
And if you sort of merge those three creatures together, you sort of get something that resembles a dragon. So he, again, has sort of used this to sort of
snake theorize. Gets you like
this. Is this the cry?
Yes. Very similar, I think. Very
it's
similar.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's more or less.
Put it through the monkey translator,
yeah,
and it's
and
so
that's
that.
What comes out. Yeah.
So when you think about it, if you have something as ferocious as a lion that has the body type of a serpent, such as the snake, but it can fly as a flying predator, such as an eagle, I'll give him that.
So that'd be terrible. So yes, he has this idea that we would have had this sort of passed down through millions of generations. We would sort of evolve this fear that's so great that we've created this
primal
sort of amalgamation, yes, of these
Where
three
does the
predators.
Fire part come from? I mean, we're all scared of, we would be scared of fire. But
they just
the
added that after. Say, we want to make it even more ferocious.
Right. Mm. Is there anything in nature that, any process by which air can be converted to fire other than like Mexican food?
Well, if it's air as we think of it, oxygen
is flammable.
And it's flammable. No.
I was kidding. Yeah. Obviously.
No, it's a common misconception. Oxygen itself is not flammable. Otherwise, when you lit a match, you would ignite the atmosphere.
All right.
Yeah, just want to be clear about that.
So what is burning?
So oxygen makes other things burn. So oxygen oxidizes things that then themselves burn, and they can make them burn more ferociously than they otherwise would. There are gases that are themselves flammable when mixed. So you take the gas that comes out of your stove and you ignite that in the presence of oxygen, that thing just goes. Same with pure hydrogen, it just goes. So you could imagine a beast, perhaps, certainly in fantasy world, where there's some process inside that produces flammable gas. And then you need some flinting mechanism with its teeth. It ignites it, and out comes flame.
When I was at camp, and we would light a match. Is that the same thing?
It is exactly the same thing. Except that would be a different kind of dragon lighting. That'd be less ferocious.
You didn't
Wait
smell
there
what
while
came
I turn
out.
Around.
It was pretty ferocious.
And hold up my tail while I, yeah. That's methane, by the way.
Methane, that's one of the interesting theories about where we get this idea of fire breathing from, that people have gone underground and they've gone to maybe either mine for minerals like gold, or they've gone to look in burial mounds and they've actually encountered, they've been carrying candles, they've encountered methane of a slightly different kind, and there's been an explosion and they've thought, well, maybe there's some terrible huge creature that lives underground and there's just thrown all this fire in our direction. So
that's right. And underground, you have anaerobic life acting. When that happens, one of its byproducts is methane. Mm-hmm. So you can have methane trapped in pockets, and especially in mines as well. Mm. You ignite that, flame comes out of the hole. Oh my gosh! Mm. Well, you know, there the dragon sleeps. Yeah,
exactly.
I wouldn't come near that if I were in superstitious times. But nowadays, I just pull out the measuring tools and we got or plug the hole. So there are other things. There's something on the show called the dire wolf. What is that?
Well, the dire wolves are absolutely enormous wolves. They are the companions of the Stark children, so they're sort of like their guard dogs, come spirit animals almost.
So are they real or are they fantasy?
Well, the size that they are on the show is fantastical, but they were real dire wolves.
What are their actual dimensions?
They're probably roughly the size of a modern grey wolf, so maybe slightly stockier, and they have a sort of more ferocious bite. But they
so
are.
These they just pumped them up a little.
Yeah, yeah, they just made them steroids. Quite a yeah. lot bigger. Yeah.
So but they're extinct now. Yeah. We lost them in the ice age, the end of the ice age. So why not bring them back?
Why not?
Okay, good. We're glad we agree on that.
So are we almost at a point where we can do that, where we can bring them back?
I'm not authorized to. I don't see why not. I mean, as in the very reachable near
all
future.
All right, so if we can do that,
yeah,
then can we combine the snake, the eagle, and the lion and make ourselves a dragon?
I like that. To create the thing that we fear most.
Yes.
What could possibly go wrong?
Well, coming up, more on the science of Game of Thrones. In particular, we'll talk about the power of mind control on Star Talk.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me, too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me, too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
Hey, remember when we did that show about the science of the golf swing? Well, let's take that to the next level. And that's because PXG has developed the Black Ops driver so golfers don't have to sacrifice distance for forgiveness. And the science proves it. PXG Black Ops driver is a breakthrough in driver technology. It's a complete and total victory in golf club engineering, unlike anything you've ever seen before. Black Ops drivers are adjustable to deliver a combined MOI of 10,000 plus for unreal forgiveness. Now that's ridiculously high. The higher the MOI, the more forgiving the club will play. So you don't have to square the ball perfectly for it to go straight and get distance. Add PXG's new advanced material face technology, and you get incredible ball speed that pushes the distance to the absolute limits. More forgiveness, more distance, no sacrifices. PXG Black Ops driver. Hit your tee shot straighter and farther. The proof is in the science. Learn more and get free shipping on all equipment. Go to pxg.com/startalk and use code startalk at checkout. That's pxg.com/startalk. Use code startalk for free shipping on all equipment. pxg.com/startalk, code startalk.
We're back on Star Talk. right here at the American Museum of Natural History, and we're extracting science from the hit TV series Game of Thrones, featuring my interview with one of their lead actors, Isaac Wright. Now, in the show, his character is paralyzed, can't walk, but he's got some serious powers of the mind. Let's check it out.
He pretty much has the entire history of the universe within his brain, or that's what's eventually going to manifest itself in there, and it makes him an incredibly powerful and wise character, I think. And it's interesting to have that parallel with the fact that he's also such a weak physical character.
Yeah, and of course what comes to mind is Stephen Hawking,
yeah.
who has brilliant
exactly.
thoughts,
yeah.
yet there's this shell
yeah.
of a physical body
yeah.
that remains. Another sort of authentic element in the fantasy is that you had this power, but you needed it had to be honed. Because in all of our superheroes that we talk about,
yeah.
or people with power, when they come into that power, they really don't know how to use it.
Yeah, and that's very much the case with Bran. And it's that it's been spread over many seasons of him starting to unlock it more and more, and it just starts as this kind of small spark of something. And he eventually finds himself in this cave of the Three-Eyed Raven where he can fully explore and learn under the tutelage of a very wise, you know, thousand-year-old tree man.
Helen, a thousand-year-old tree man, could you explain this, please?
Well, just to give you a bit of background on Bran, he essentially walks in on the Queen having sex with her brother, and as a result, he's pushed out of a very high window. He appears to be hovering between life and death, and he has these visions.
This is episode one
yes.
of the series. The Queen is having sex with her brother, and he's a child, walks in.
Yes.
And they push him out the window.
Yes.
And he becomes paralyzed.
Yes.
But then all seeing.
Yes, so okay. He starts to develop these, he starts to have these visions, and he starts to sort of be able to sort of travel beyond his own physical body and into the body of his wolf, his direwolf, and that's how it all begins, really.
It's clear. But it also meant he had a mentor.
Yes.
The thousand-year-old tree man.
Yes, thousand-year-old tree man.
And mentors are, that's a fundamental part of anybody's powers.
Mm.
But Michael, do you have mentors, comedic mentors?
Sure. Sure, but people that no. The answer is no.
Okay. I thought I'd check.
Well, who was your mentor? You must have
I assembled my mentors a la carte.
Uh huh.
So there'd be a little piece of this person whose expertise I greatly valued, but it wasn't the totality of what I sought for myself. Then I'd find a little bit of expertise in another, and then you get enough of that, you staple it together. And then you have sort of an amalgamated.
Did you
mentor.
Ever meet Carl Sagan?
Yes. So he's a little piece of that.
Right. And was he like the thousand-year-old tree man imparting the history of the universe into your head?
A little bit. This man, I was in high school, and he was already accomplished and hadn't done his cosmos yet.
Mm.
But nonetheless, he was fully accomplished. So a little bit of wisdom came my way. That has affected me my entire life.
Hmm.
The fact that he gave me any attention at all as a high school kid, age 17, and this is Carl Sagan, you know, already famous. I said, if I am ever remotely as famous as he is, I will give time to the next generation of students the way he gave time to me. And that was just a certain duty and a passing of a torch that I felt was fundamental.
If only I felt that with my children. But I don't.
Well, so of course, Isaac's character, he can see through time.
Mm.
He's got bad attitude in this department.
Mm.
So here's more from my interview with Game of Thrones star Isaac Wright. Check it out.
Bran gets to look at certain events from the past specifically, and there were hints at the fact that he might have had some connection with one of the characters in the past. He sort of shouts, and the character turns around but sees nothing. And it's interesting because it is time travel in a sense, and I think as Stephen Hawking famously said that the greatest evidence that time travel to the past isn't possible is that we haven't had anyone visit us from the future. And what's interesting about Bran going back in time is that no one can see him when he's back in time, so maybe that's our route into traveling back in time.
So what's your most memorable time sequence, foretelling moment?
Well, I think the key one from this past season, which fits in with the whole kind of deterministic, indeterministic argument with the whole time element, is the tragic death of Hodor. Bran has, in trying to learn about the past of Hodor, has directly resulted in Hodor becoming Hodor. So I think it definitely just lends to that concept that this was a predestined thing that had to happen.
Explain to me warging.
Warging, okay.
Warging, what's going on there?
Mystical, magical ability to be able to take over the mind of another creature or a human being.
So okay, you become that creature.
Yeah, you don't, in the body of that creature. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Wow, so to go into the mind of another creature, and it makes me think of this, you know, the singularity that people say we're approaching, where you upload your brain into a computer. And that would be interesting if you could not only upload your brain into a computer, if you could download it into another brain. That asks the question, what is your actual identity? Right? So when you are occupying the other entity, are you still you, or are you that entity?
I suppose it comes to the what is consciousness?
That's what it comes down to.
And that for me, I think, is one of the most interesting things, because neuroscience is a field that fascinates me, and I think
not fascinating enough for you to major it in college. let me just say.
But yet we still know so little about.
Right. That's why it's fascinating.
And as you said, in the coming years, I think that's going to be exactly where the route that science is going to go down. That's going to be the next.
Because I'm fascinated that two twins who are genetically identical have separate consciousness.
Yeah, exactly.
And every morning, not every morning, but more often than I'm ready to admit, I wake up and I say, why am I still me and not someone else, or vice versa? Yeah.
Or are you constantly just changing into different things the
whole
time?
That's what I wonder. Is my entity today just what I think I always was?
Yeah.
But yesterday I was actually something different.
Yeah.
Consciousness. So do you go there in your book here?
A little bit, yeah. I talk about how there are some quite new experiments that have been done with virtual reality, which can sort of convince the wearer who's got a headset on that you can basically change someone's identity with virtual reality, and they will experience that new body as their own body, and when they will feel that it's being touched and moved around, and it's kind of quite a sort of, it's quite a sort of at the frontier.
So it's a modern version of what he just described.
Yeah, yeah.
Except he gets to pick whose mind he occupies. Here it would be some avatar that you created.
Yes.
A fantasy version of yourself.
Yes, exactly. But just the potential for that to sort of give you the experience of living, as I say, a completely different life is quite something, I think.
But it's not just occupying that state, but it's, by the way, the avatar that I occupy, that's me before, during, and after I occupy it, right? I'm not competing with itself to run its own life. So that's a little different, just a little.
Yeah.
Right. So what do you know of mind control in nature? Is there any example of that?
Yeah. I mean, there's some quite disturbing stuff that we see in nature. I mean, it's interesting what you were saying about...
I didn't know I was going to get a disturbing answer. So now, can I retract the question?
Sorry.
Okay, so tell me.
Yeah.
Tell me.
So there's a creature, a tiny, tiny, tiny wasp called the jewel wasp, which is very beautiful, very, very small. And it basically completely takes over the body of a cockroach to get the cockroach to raise it. Lays its egg on the bottom of the cockroach's body, and basically the cockroach loses its will to resist the power of the wasp, and basically raises the wasp's young and serves as its protector.
Surrogate.
Yeah, so basically it protects the wasp's young, and it also feeds it. So the wasp's young, as it grows, gradually eats the body of the cockroach. And the cockroach doesn't complain, it doesn't do anything. It basically has its mind and its body completely taken over by this tiny creature that's much smaller and much less
physically powerful.
My
marriage is a lot like that.
Well, coming up next, we'll get into the psychology of Game of Thrones when Star Talk returns. Right here under the sphere of the Hayden Planetarium. And tonight we're extracting science that can be found in the hit HBO series Game of Thrones. And here is more of my interview with Game of Thrones actor Isaac Wright. You're immersed in this really creepy, backwards world. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And had you learned about the Dark Ages or the Middle Ages in school before you stepped into this acting gig?
Only kind of superficially, nothing. The 10-year-old me wasn't an expert on any kind of medieval history or beheadings and all sorts of Game of Thrones violence. For me, it was just quite fun to be on a set where you had all these dead bodies that you could play around with. It didn't really register the violence.
Right, I see, because it's at 10, it just is. It just,
yeah, it's just, this is, yeah, this is cool. Just... Oh, there's a head on the floor. I'll take a picture of it.
Hey, you did a good job with the head. Yeah.
I think what Game of Thrones has touched upon is the quite sort of brutal side, as it were, of that whole aspect of those times. And has come under fire for it, I think, on certain occasions with a number of scenes. Mm-hmm. But I think it's important that kind of horror did, you know, occur in those times.
Yeah, what we don't know, maybe psychologists know this.
Yeah.
I have to maybe bring one into the show.
Yeah.
If you're exposed to violence, does that mean you then become prone to violence? Or is that a world you get to say, I want to make sure my world is not that?
Yeah.
I want to know. And none of us here are psychologists. So, Travis, are you there?
I am here. I've been summoned.
Hey. So you're a professional psychologist, but also a fan of Game of Thrones.
Oh, yes. I am a psychology professor, a big nerd, and I love using fiction to talk about real psychology.
And I have here your book, Game of Thrones Psychology. That's the name of the book. The mind is dark and full of terrors. So what's the takeaway from all this violence in the minds of who's portrayed in their time and in their day, and what effect it might have on the audience?
That's complicated. There are a lot of different reasons. In real life, it can be hard to study. We know that in experiments that watching violence produces short-term effects on someone's behavior, but it's hard to study in the long run. If you have an idea that this could turn someone into a violent psychopath, it's not exactly ethical or practical to do that study.
So, because I wonder if the same force of influence turns some people into psychopaths and others that has no effect, shouldn't we be studying the people on whom it has no effect? And isn't that where we would learn more than only studying the people that it affects? Because in the end, we want it to not affect you.
Yeah, a number of prominent people in psychology have started to take exactly that point of view, that we need to learn more about what brings out the best. You know, throughout the history of psychology, we looked at what brings out the worst in people. Freud looking at everyone as neurotic, and Milgram and Zimbardo looking at what brings out the worst in people's behavior. And Seligman, known for studying what makes people feel helpless, said we need to start looking at the good side of human nature. Zimbardo, who became famous because of a prison simulation study that went very wrong when some of the guards, the people cast as guards, became very cruel to those cast as prisoners. And Zimbardo said we need to study why some people didn't become those, why some people become heroes. And the main thing he's finding is that there's not a lot known about this. We know a few things about that. We know a few things about resilience, what makes someone, you know, do better in trauma and under pressure than other people. But we don't know a lot. And so it is a growing area right now.
Yeah, I think it's long overdue. In fact, you look in the military, of course, some people would suffer from PTSD and others don't. Others come
home.
And
you cannot always predict who it's going to be.
That's interesting, because if you could predict, that would be an amazing advance in our understanding of the psychological state of warriors.
There are people who, as a form of coping with horrible situations, do shut down parts of themselves. We also know that traumatic brain injury, you know, injury to areas in the frontal cortex, can shut off their empathy for other people.
Okay, tell me about the psychology of revenge. This is a recurring theme in Game of Thrones, and I have to confess, revenge, you know that feels good. So it's got to be something deep inside of us.
We want to feel power. power over our own lives, over others, and when we feel mistreated, when something horrible has happened that made us feel helpless, it's hard to maintain a sense of feeling strong. Revenge is one way of feeling we've restored a sense of balance, of justice in the world, and a sense of power for ourselves. The name Game of Thrones, you know, itself can be about power, where the throne is in people's own lives. You know, every one of these characters is motivated to have power, power over others, power over themselves. You know, Arya, who's seeking revenge, you know, my favorite character, she's driven to restore her sense of balance in the world, but she already had spunk before that. You know, back when her father told her what life is like for the lady of a castle, she said, "No, that's not me." Learning to swing a sword was her way of having a sense of power even back then. Later, another character was horribly, sadistically abused by someone, you know, found a way to have a sense of power in her own life by taking power over the person who had tormented her.
So if that is something fundamental within us, and you have a clever screenwriter, storyteller, cinematographer, they would portray this, and that would resonate deeply within us, and we want to see more of it, presumably.
And I've always said, I really think Game of Thrones is so popular because of the psychology of the characters. It's not about the dragons, the White Walkers, or the magic. It's about the human beings. They hadn't had dragons in a long time. For most of them, they're concerned about dragons. It's the idea of dragons. The ideas affect their whole lives.
Okay. Travis, thank you for sharing your psychological insights.
Thank you. This was fun.
So thanks again. Everyone, Travis.
Thank you.
So coming up, we're going to break down fact and fiction of some key Game of Thrones storylines when Stark Talk continues.
Do you want to set up your child for success? Of course you do. Maybe you want to save money on private tutoring, or maybe it's just out of your budget altogether. Is this a big school year for your child? Like maybe they're starting kindergarten, middle school, or high school, or some other milestone. Maybe your family moved and they're starting at a new school. Is your child ahead? Not getting challenged enough in class? Well, we love that little smarty, but we want them to be engaged. IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids covering math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed to help them really understand and master topics in a fun way. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid, no matter the age or the personality. There's one site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Kids can use it at home on the computer or on the go through the app on your phone or your tablet. No more grading those worksheets. IXL grades everything itself. And no more trying to figure out how to explain math equations or grammar rules yourself. IXL has built-in explanation videos. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Star Talk Radio listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/StarTalk. Visit IXL.com/StarTalk to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
the charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink?
This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
Welcome back to Star Talk. Right here here in the Hall of the Universe at the American Museum of Natural History. We're exploring the science and the history within the hit fantasy series Game of Thrones. And Helen, can you tell me about some of the storylines in Game of Thrones that might have actual roots in historical events?
Oh, well, I think there are lots of them. I mean, it's sort of almost like a sort of hall of historical mirrors where you can pick out lots of things that actually happened.
And so they're not by accident. You're saying they're purposefully put in.
I think so. I think they're sort of an inspiration, but usually they're a sort of jumping off point. So things like the wall, which is obviously this huge, completely impossible wall made of ice that divides the Seven Kingdoms from the sort of lands of the barbarians beyond, is sort of based on Hadrian's Wall. It was the extreme edge of the Roman Empire, and beyond that was Northern England and Scotland, which was never really conquered by the Romans.
And it's an ancestor of Donald Trump built this wall. Yes, okay.
Yeah, and that's the thing. There's still a bit of debate about whether it was a good idea to build the wall, whether, you know, the amount of people you have to have garrisoned on that wall was actually an effective way of, you know, combating the threat of people from beyond the wall.
And how about the Red Wedding?
Again, that was a sort of possibly inspired in part by Scottish history. And some guests of the King of Scotland were invited to this wonderful dinner, and it was all going brilliantly. And then suddenly, at the end of the dinner, a single drum began to beat, and everybody went quiet. And then a bull's head on a platter was brought in, and the Douglases, who were at the dinner, were all killed.
You all some messed up people over there.
Yeah.
So what it means is, I think, that if you're going to tell this kind of story, George R. R. Martin has to be fluent in so the history of cruelty and the storytelling that surrounded it, and the legends and the culture of this kind of barbaric conduct.
Absolutely. So it has its roots in this sort of real event that from our very unpleasant European past.
Coming up next, we'll answer your questions culled from the internet and the fan base of Star Talk. Your questions on Game of Thrones when Star Talk returns. We're back. Star Talk. Hall of the Universe. We're exploring the underlying science from the storytelling in the ever-popular series Game of Thrones. And right now it's time for the ever-popular Cosmic Queries segment. Let's do it. This is a fan favorite where we cull questions from our fan base. So, you're going to read them to me. I've never seen them or heard them before.
Dan Hone from Melbourne, Australia. What kind of solar system would Westeros have to be in to experience such long summers? Obviously, it's a normal day-night cycle, he says.
Yeah, so that's a great question. So, in fact, we have a 24-hour day, day and night. If we rotated more slowly, our day would be longer and relative to the year. And in the case of Venus, its day is on the same time scale as its year. So that one day lasts about as long as its year. Now, so
every day's your birthday.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. That's good. I hadn't thought about that. So I suppose you could configure that. The difference is, to have these long periods of winter and summer, what you would need is a planet that would have a strongly elliptical orbit. And if it's a strongly elliptical orbit, you would spend time near the sun, time far away from the sun. When you have strong, or its host star, when you have strong elliptical orbits, it turns out it's not symmetric. You spend way more time far away than you do close up. Comets experience that. Mm-hmm. So a comet's around, it's only here for a couple of weeks, then it's going to spend 100 million years.
Is that
out
because of the slingshot
system.
Effect of gravity is throwing you
back
exactly.
out? Yeah, exactly. The closer you get to the sun, the faster you will move. And Kepler discovered this in the early 1600s. So if you had long winters, long summers, the winters would be vastly longer than your summers in this configuration.
Got it.
Good.
I don't got it.
Okay.
Elena Clark from Burbank, California. In Game of Thrones, there is a bright red comet featured. Is this possible? Can there be other colors as well? Do you know this bright red comet in Game of Thrones?
Yeah, there is a comet appears because it's sort of seen as the sort of herald of dragons returning to the world. But there's also
there are no red comets, but if you see a comet very low on the horizon, it would take on sunset colors, just the way the sun would, because the light is coming through the atmosphere. So you can make something look red, but it wouldn't be red natively, no.
So the answer to the second question, could there be other colors as well? No, right?
You get a blue, there's an ion tail that it has two kinds of tails. There's a with something called a dust tail and an ion tail. So those are the two colors you get. You generally don't get red. Okay, go.
Terry Rogers, Vancouver, British Columbia. Brand can see both the past and the future in visions. My understanding is that time travel to the future would take a near infinite amount of energy, and time travel to the past is impossible. But is viewing the past or future theoretically possible without actually traveling there? Wow. You want me to take this one?
Yeah, you take that. Anybody?
No.
So, backwards time travel would take an extraordinary amount of energy because you have to curve that. So, the writer said it backwards. You'd have to curve the fabric of space and time, create a trajectory where you could then join your space-time life at an earlier time. So, that is theoretically possible. Traveling to the future, you don't need anything special. You just travel fast.
Mm-hmm.
If you travel fast, your time ticks much more slowly for you.
Or if you just live. I mean, we're time traveling to the future right now.
We are. We're time traveling at a rate of 1 second per second.
That's right.
But if you travel fast, then you will enter the future at a slower rate than the rest of us,
right,
as prescribed by Einstein's general theory of relativity.
So the second part is, can we view the past or future theoretically without actually traveling there? Is there some way?
I know of no way. No. Right. Yeah.
That was my guess.
No. We are prisoners of the present, forever stuck in transition between the past and the future.
Did you just make that up?
Yeah.
Good.
Okay.
It was good.
Well, thank you, Michael, for those questions. So we've been comparing the reality and fantasy of living in medieval times through my interview with Game of Thrones star Isaac Wright. Let's check it out. When I think of the Middle Ages, I think of people in desperate need of science.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when you are seeing what people do as written and scripted, what are you thinking? Well, are you thinking, boy, I'm glad I don't live in...
I think more than anything, it's look at this barbarism.
Barbarism.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if that is the world, and you're born into that world, do you even know it's barbaric? It just is.
That's a very good point. I think, you know, relatively speaking, you're born into that world, you just survive it.
500 years from now, will people be saying, oh, those barbaric years of 2016, I'm glad I don't live then.
Yeah. You know? You know what, given the way everything's given now, I think that's perfect.
Yeah, I mean, is there anything today that you would judge to be medieval and you could just as soon not have any of it?
Oh, I think religion is the number one. From medieval times.
There it is.
Yeah.
Religion has strong roots in a time that's pre-science.
Definitely. Yeah,
basically.
Definitely. So. I think it was their science.
So, that's an interesting observation, that religion was their science. Mm. So in Game of Thrones, the gods are real, right?
Yeah.
Kind of.
There's a certain amount of skepticism about them. And one of the academics that I spoke to said the reason that she loved the show so much was because if you asked a medieval person what are the things they'd most like to see, they would say a resurrection and a dragon. And so obviously Game of Thrones has both of those and nudity as well. So I think...
Female nudity especially.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. They need to work on the male nudity.
Yeah.
But they need to up that. But
What about sacrifice? That's something that's been with the human, dare we call it, civilization, like from the beginning. But in the case of Game of Thrones, we have people being burned just to please the gods so that you could win a battle.
Yes. So there's an idea that, for instance, the flesh and blood of a king is very valuable. This is also an idea we see in medieval Europe as well, but not in quite the same way. And so the child of one of the would-be kings is burned alive to ensure victory in battle.
You know what intrigues me, and I wonder if you have insight into this. As a professional scientist, if there's something I don't understand, I just say, I don't understand it. Mm. I'll investigate it further. In medieval times, if they didn't understand it, they would just invoke some supernatural explanation for it, and then that was that.
Yes.
Mm. So being knowingly steeped in ignorance, there was no room for that. Everything had to have a cause and effect.
Mm. Well, I mean, I suppose in Game of Thrones, you have, I mean, one of the things that really developed understanding and curiosity in Europe as part of the Renaissance were things like the telescope and the microscope. And so, yeah, you already... Just
both invented within 10 years of one another, by the way.
Kind of, yeah,
the telescope and the microscope.
Extraordinary,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I think, even when people were developing those technologies, there was still obviously quite a lot of debate about whether that was going against religion, whether that was prying into things that God didn't want human beings to know about. So I suppose there's always got to be a way around that. In order for people to have that curiosity, they've got to try and find a way of squaring that with the predominant religious thought.
You know, I hadn't actually thought that through completely, but you needed that for there to be the full-up Renaissance and the Enlightenment.
I think there was a sufficient amount of curiosity. There was a sufficient sort of organisations were starting to be founded, I suppose, you know, slightly post the medieval period, but people were starting to sort of get together and form sort of science associations and meet and exchange ideas. And once that starts, I think it's very difficult, even for something like religion, to kind of stop it.
Something I hadn't fully appreciated. If you don't have an exchange of ideas, you can... You can wallow in your own superstitions without the thoughts ever getting challenged. I want to pick up on a point that I began in the last clip there. At any given moment, is anyone actually saying to themselves, boy, we live in backwards times? No. I bet back then they were not even saying that. Back in medieval times, they're saying, wow, we've come a long way. Look how I now can cure this disease compared with my ancestors, or compared with even decades before. And I ask myself what the year 2016 would look like in the year 2116. How primitive will we be to them? How barbaric would we look to them to try to make sure that we can look forward to tomorrow and not fear it? This, a point of view of the cosmic perspective. You've been watching Star Talk. I've been your host, Neil deGrasse Tyson, your personal astrophysicist. And as always, I bid you to keep looking up.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen. Remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah. Of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well...
Ooh, yeah. That happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.